listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, got an exciting show for you today. I've been driving the Toyota Supra and I can't wait to tell you a little bit about it. Before we kick things off, let me tell you about Dodge. And with Dodge Power Dollars, it's every horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle that you purchase, you get $10 off. So peeling out in a 2019 Dodge Charger RT Scat Pack, and you just get $4,580 off the price. So it's a great deal. Dodge Power Dollars. Check it out. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I am Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, with Bill Goldberg. Hey, Bill, how you doing?
I am just peachy, my friend, and you?
Good. Things are good. Had an interesting week driving some cars. I'll tell you guys about in a little bit. New Toyota Supra. We'll get into that in a little bit. I know we're kind of you're pressed for time. Always busy. Got things going on, but. Man, I wanted to touch base with you and talk about some of the projects you got going on. I saw the post from Marcus Angel about the Lawman Mustang. I don't know if he's just kind of doing a final assembly or if he's just doing sort of the test fit, but he posted something that looked like the Lawman with the engine in it and a couple of seats in it. It's looking pretty good.
Yeah. It's getting there, man. It is getting there.
Have you?
I hate to do this, man. Dude, they're calling me right now.
Oh, they are? All right.
Yeah. This is my thing, man. Yeah. I'm sorry. I got to get off the phone.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Dude. Go do it. We'll catch up with you. Anyway, check out. He's working on a big deal.
It's busier than talking about.
Yeah, we're working on a big deal. They were supposed to call him a little bit later, and they're calling him early, but he's got to go do that thing. We'll tell you about that deal later. Granted, he signs that deal. I think that's it. He's been working on it for weeks and weeks, probably since December. But so Angel Restorations, our guy Marcus Angel, our buddy over there in Arizona, has been working on the Lawman Mustang, and he posted the photo of it, and it looked like this car is really coming along. And it's such a badass engine, too. And it's interesting because the front of the car, when you see it, has just like where a radiator would be, it has like a very small... looks like an oil cooler with a big a water tank in front of it with no radiator. So I don't exactly know the story behind it. I know it was meant to be sort of a drag race vehicle, so maybe it didn't need much, or there's some sort of remote cooling going on. But it's looking pretty good. We'll have to talk to Marcus a little bit about it and see what's going on with that thing. And, you know, we'll get into that a little bit more. You know, I've been, I think I told you guys, I've been working on the truck as well, working on the Lightning. I ran into this weird issue recently where I went out the other day and the battery was just dead. Like the battery's completely dead. There's no power to the vehicle, not even enough to just hit the door locks, right? Which is very little draw. And, you know, I mounted the batteries to the back. I put two batteries in the back. Only one of them is hooked up right now. But I mounted one to the back underneath the rear bumper area, move some weight off the front, move it to the back, hopefully increase a little bit of traction. You got to have the battery on there anyway. So might as well take 40 pounds off the front, move it to the back. And it's a good, you know, Odyssey battery. It's, you know, pretty expensive. We mounted it up made a custom mount for it, and everything was working fine. Drove it for a while, you know, on and off for a couple of months, been working on it. And I've been doing some stuff on the interior, and you know, we had the gauges. I took the gauges out and had them rebuilt. We told you guys a little bit about that, and that the the PSOM that controls some of the shifting that was all rebuilt. Then we had the gauges restored a little bit, had the needles painted orange again, and you know, replaced some of the lights and polished the lens and that. And while I was in there, you'll notice, like, on these older trucks, it's not a lot of interior lighting like there are on modern cars. There's no, like, ambient lighting. There's no lights on the window switches. These old window switches don't even light up. There's no button to light up. So they don't, you know, you can't really see the window switches and the door locks at night. You can't see the door handles, you know, at night to open the door. So I've been doing a little bit of, like, just accent lighting, very low draw, tiny LEDs that I could hide in places that just give it a little bit of a glow to it. So when I went in and I noticed that that the battery was completely dead, or there was no power to the vehicle, and I thought, oh, maybe something I hooked up was putting a draw on the battery, like even when it's locked. I thought maybe there was somebody with the lighting or something that was putting a draw on the battery. I was like, but, you know, it's a good battery. It seemed to be charged. And these things are so tiny. It's just so little draw. And I had it wired to the ignition anyway, so they weren't staying on all the time. So they were going off, and I saw that. Anyway, so I grabbed a good charger that's set up for AGM batteries and stuff, and I put the charger on there, and, you know, and it said it was pretty charged. It was like 90%, it was like 90% charged. So I was like, man, I couldn't really figure out what it was. And I was thinking, maybe there was some disconnect with the wiring. You know, maybe something came loose on the battery or a ground came loose. But I checked the wires. It seemed fine. I hooked up the battery charger and I charged it. And when I clip on the battery charger, plug it into the wall, set it up for, you know, 12-volt AGM, the whole thing, and it's charging the battery, it can get power to the vehicle, and it did work. So now I'm thinking, oh, the wiring's fine, because I'm literally putting the clamps on the battery wires on the terminals there, and it's working. So I guess I got to grab a voltmeter and see if there's something wrong with the battery. But just kind of a weird thing to wake up to one morning is just kind of go out there, and it's just dead. And anyway, so I got to look into that. If anybody has any ideas on what's going on there, let me know. I know because I have two batteries, I can swap the batteries. It's a little bit of a pain in the butt because they're kind of upside down and underneath the bed, and they're kind of heavy, and you kind of have to, like, undo the bolts and lower it down, like, onto your chest or something, and then, you know, move it over to the other one. Or I could hook up the second battery with some temporary, with some wires that I can make or something, and see if that makes a difference. But kind of a weird thing. But anyway, so a little bit of a wiring issue there. I guess a wiring issue. Maybe it's a battery issue. We'll figure that out. And the gauges will go back in. the Powerdyne supercharger is being rebuilt. I sent them the Powerdyne and the Vortec to rebuild. If you remember, the Vortec was the one that seized up on the BMW M3. That was the really expensive date I went on. It cost me, I don't know, like $4,000 or something. I had to buy a second supercharger for that. So I took this one, and we found out that one of the bearings slid underneath, you know, came out, went underneath one of the teeth of the gear. And most rebuild kits won't do that whole shaft with the gear on it going through the middle of it. So it will have to go back to Vortec. So if you do want to rebuild it, which I will do, and I'll get it all fresh and new, and it'll go back to Vortec to do it. Now, it's an older supercharger. It's a V2, and I believe they can do an upgrade. They can do an upgrade to, like, a V2 SI or maybe a T-trim, something like that. which might make sense to do if they're going to supercharge it. If we're going to rebuild the supercharger anyway, we might as well do some upgrades on it. And then I don't know. I'll use it for another project, or if one of you guys want it, you know, maybe I'll sell it or something. It'll be basically an inexpensive way to get a brand new supercharger. And then from there, we're going to figure out what the next steps are. I went to the SEMA. There's a SEMA MPMC event, and the MPMC event is kind of like, it's like a mini SEMA show, but without all of the show portion. It's the meeting portion. So it's an event with about, I don't know, about 40 or 50 of the performance manufacturers, all jammed into one hotel, and every half hour you can jump from meeting to meeting, sort of like speed dating, and meet with all of the companies. And the whole point of this conference is to meet with the manufacturers as media, although we're running out of the enthusiast books and muscle Mustangs and hot rods and car crafts and so there's a few left, but a lot of them, as you know, just became sort of online only publications. But it's a chance for the magazines to meet with the manufacturers and go, hey, we've got a few ideas for these projects over the course of the year. We're going to build this car or this truck or whatever. Can we work with you on this? What new parts do you have that you want to show off? And all the cool like tech articles and projects, short-term and long-term projects the magazines build over the year. It's great promotion for the manufacturers. It gets their parts installed, oftentimes dyno tested. And there's no real trade of money going on. It's not an advertising event. It's a trade event. And it gives us an opportunity for the magazines to go, hey, we're gonna dyno test for this, or we're gonna dyno test for that, or we're gonna do the show Engine Masters that Freiberger does that I love. And I had some deals in place for the truck, for the Lightning, but you don't always get to meet these people. You don't get to see them all the time face to face. I've known them for 10, 12 years. The guys from Holley and Comp Cams, they're all on the other coast. So it's good to sit down with them and go, hey, what are we doing? And what do you have new? And Holley's got new EFI. They did Ford Fest. You guys know the LS Fest that they've done for years and years. It's a huge event. They did Ford Fest this year, and it was already huge. The first year it was huge. And along with that, they debuted a bunch of really cool Ford products, a lot of small block Ford products. They have new intake manifolds. They have a coil-on-plug conversion. And then the distributor just has no cap, and it's a low boy distributor. So now you can do like a front facing throttle body. You don't have to get, the distributor's not in the way. They have a direct fit Fox Body Mustang EFI conversion. It even comes with a little chassis. You take out the driver's seat, it mounts to the bolts. You put the driver's seat back on, and you got a Holley EFI in there. You got to change the engine harness. I asked about this because I just spent doing all custom wire loom and everything all over my engine harness, and then they're like, yeah, you got to swap the engine harness. So I got to start it all over again if I switch to the Holley EFI. But I like what they're doing. And anyway, so met with the guys met with them about the truck. And the one thing we started talking about is I met with a couple of the supercharger companies. And for the Mustang Cobra, for the red car, it's a 331 engine. It has, if you guys remember, just refresh your memory, it meant to be sort of period correct modifications. It's still an iron block. It's a two-bolt block, and that's going to be a limiting factor, but it's all beefed up. DSS Racing built the short block for me. It has freeze plugs. It has the thread-end freeze plugs, which is a little bit more structure to them. And it's got a stud girdle. It's got a main cap girdle on it. And it's got all the good stuff on it. So it'll handle good power for sure. Just not a four-bolt block power. So We have that engine in there. We took the original GT40 heads, fully ported them. I went a little overkill on some of the valve train components. I've got stainless steel intake valves. I've got Inconel exhaust valves. I've got Harlan Sharps, like mini shaft mount rockers on it, which eliminates the guide plates. And so they don't turn, they don't spin, they don't, less friction, no guide plates. It's good. It's kind of badass. We've got a great, Comp Cams blower cam in it. We've got the Pro Charger, the D1SC, which, I like. It's self-contained. You know, we're making the brackets and stuff for that. You know, we can turn up the wick on this thing and go big horsepower. I just don't know if the engine's really going to handle that much, but, I think we could get somewhere in the 600 mark and the high fives. It's easy to do with this engine combination and the supercharger. But we're going to run it on 91 octane, kind of make kind of a street car for it. You know, if I was getting 550 or so at the engine, I think that would be fine for me. And I think this thing would scoot around really quickly. I don't know what that comes out to be. Something like, 475, 460, somewhere in that 450 to 500 range at the tires would be badass on that car. So, but with the Ford Lightning, we're using a dart block. We're using a 4-bolt dart block. And it's going to be all aluminum. We're going to cut some weight off that thing. So it's obviously a big pricey block, and it is costing me some money for sure. But I'm using an all aluminum Dart 427 small block Ford. It's their 351 based engine. It's punched out to 427. They are making the short block for me. I'll bring it back here and assemble build the rest of the engine myself, like we did on the Cobra. Our buddy, David Jusko, that was in a few weeks ago on the show, who's working on my M3 for me. I'll probably drag him back in here to build the engine with me. He did the Mustang Cobra engine with me, and we dialed in, degreed the cam, did the whole thing. So, we'll probably, work on that one as well. Which would be cool. So all aluminum, and then, Dart's, 225cc heads, the biggest Ford head they have, will go on there. We're going to do a custom ground blower cam from Comp Cams. I forgot the specs. I don't have it in front of me, but it's something like, I want to say 220-something, 235-something lift, maybe 235 lift. And I'm sorry, duration. It lifts probably like a 604, 611. Somewhere, I know the intake and the exhaust lift are over 600. It is staggered. It's going to be a 114 lobe SEP. Comp likes to cut, 4 degrees of advance in it. So it's a 114 plus four, just based off memory here. And I want to do a shaft mount rocker system on it. I don't know if we're going to go as much RPM where you'd really require the shaft mount system, but I like it. I like the stability. I like the durability of it. I like that there's, we don't need the guide plates and stuff. So that's going to be kind of badass. But anyway, the point of this is I've been talking to some of the supercharger companies, and I kind of want to do one of the bigger race superchargers, one of the ones you don't normally see on the street. The Lightning has two fuel tanks, one kind of behind the driver lengthwise and one in the back. It holds something like, 34, 36, maybe 37 gallons total. It's like a 15-something and a 17 or 18-gallon tank. So we have a few options here. I can fill up both tanks with just our shitty 91 octane gas and just kind of run it on low boost, or pull some of the timing or whatever. Just get it running as good as it can on the 91 octane. Or I can optionally use one of the tanks for E85 or high octane. There's not a lot of E85 here in LA. Of course, over here at Corolla's Garage, we have a racing shop, and we get a lot of VP fuel delivered for the race car. So You know, I can order up some VP racing fuel or something like that and run one tank 100 or octane and 191 octane, and I can switch it on the dash. And then, you know, with Holley EFI and the fuel systems that I was talking to Aeromotive about, we can run dual pumps. Each tank has its own pump, and each tank can have a dual pump system, and we could probably program it to do use one pump in the tank, and then up to a certain boost level, it kicks on the second pump, you know, to supply the engine that way. And then the second tank can do the same thing. It can mimic the first, or we can, you know, set it up for, you know, different pressures with the 85 or however we want to do it. So we have a few options on it. But I like the ProCharger F1A, and I like the Vortec V30, and they're both different step up gear ratios and different CFM and different efficiency levels, and they're cool. They're kind of badass. I like them both. I don't know if any of you guys have used either one of those. If so, you let me know. Tell me your thoughts on Vortec versus ProCharger. I'm using them both. I have a ProCharger, which is on the Mustang Cobra, which I like it a lot. I haven't, except, you know, we haven't run it, but a lot of good things about it, and its build quality, everything on that is good. The BMW M3, we blew one supercharger, but that wasn't a Vortec kit. It was their supercharger, but it wasn't one of their kits, and if you guys remember back to that story, the oiling system was insufficient. I believe the oiling system should be on top of the supercharger. So when it kind of sprays, mists that oil, it gravity feeds down to the bottom. Well, these guys had the mister at the bottom of the supercharger trying to blow up onto the gears. And I don't think it works quite as well. So I think it was an oiling issue that that caused the bearings to heat up and break. So we fixed that on the BMW, and we upgraded to the new Vortec TI supercharger. Seems to be working fine. But what are your thoughts, Vortec versus ProCharger? I'd love to hear some of your stories about that. You know, let me know what you think. Of course, you guys can hit me up on social media. But interesting stuff going on, and I definitely like those both of those big race superchargers. It would be interesting to see if I don't think we're going to get big horsepower on 91 octane. We probably got to talk to our tuning buddy Ray McClellan of Full Throttle Customs. We should get him in here and talk to him a little bit about it. Can we get 1,000 horsepower? Can we get 1,000 engine horsepower, crank horsepower? That would be fantastic. I know what the engine can handle it. I don't think I think it's going to take some racing fuel or something to make that happen. But I don't know. I don't know how bad our 91 octane really is out here. I think it's shit. But Ray is out here. He's tuned a million of these things, so we'll find out a little bit more about what he thinks on it. So. Anyway, we'll get into that. I want to tell you guys about the Toyota Supra. I've been driving that for a few days. It's pretty interesting, and I know you guys are going to be kind of curious about it. But before we do that, let me tell you a little bit about Dodge. Visit your local Dodge dealer, where they bring you performance, technology, and great deals. There's never been a better time right now, because Dodge is offering Power Dollars. With Power Dollars, you'll get $10 off for each horsepower of your new car. Every 2019 Dodge Charger, every Challenger, everything they have. That means you can pull away in a 2019 Dodge Charger RT Scat Pack with 485 horsepower and receive an almost $5,000 cash back allowance. So if you get more power, you get more off. It's that simple. So hurry into your local Dodge dealer today and take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. All right. So Toyota Supra. A car we've been looking forward to for quite some time. I thought it was interesting. I know. Let's get right into this. You know, Toyota versus BMW debate. yes, it's very much a BMW. I was actually surprised in how much it was a BMW. It's an interesting partnership between Toyota and BMW. Now, there's nothing wrong with the car. The car is fantastic, and I have no problem with it being a lot of BMW components when it comes to the performance of the car. What does that mean down the road? I mean, will the car potentially be valuable in 20 or 30 years from now at auction because of the Toyota Supra name and it's a good performing car? Or will it hurt the value that people aren't really buying into the fact that it's a Supra? It's more of more Z4 BMW than anything else. I've been driving the car, enjoying the car. I went back and tried to read a bunch of stuff on the car to figure out how much of it is Toyota versus BMW. And honestly, other than the body styling and probably the gauges digital feel a little Toyota to me, and maybe some of the exhaust tuning, I don't know how much of it is Toyota. I don't even know if the suspension tuning or the brakes or any of that stuff or the steering feedback, if that's just all straight up BMW or not. But they sent me a yellow one, and don't love the color. Some people love the yellow car. I don't like the yellow. I don't like any yellow car for the most part. They're okay. It's not bad. You go see a Ferrari 355 in yellow and like, yeah, it's cool. It looks good. But then you see it in red, or you see it in blue and you're like, yeah, that's still better. So that's just kind of my thought on yellow. But it did draw a lot of attention. You know, it was a highly anticipated car. I don't know what it's doing as far as sales, but everywhere I went, people were looking at the car, stopping and taking pictures, asking about it. Hey, is that the new Supra? And yeah, like, hey, take a look, open the door, do whatever you want. It looks awesome. Take some pictures of it. It's a cool car. It's very much a proper sports car. Recently, we've been driving a lot of SUVs, and occasionally we jump into some crazy supercars and the McLarens and the Lamborghinis. And you're not going to get into the Supra and go, oh, this thing is just like a, Huracan, but it's not. But for where it sort of fits up in the lineup of sports cars, it's a great proper sports car. It's quick. Tests have ranged for anywhere from 3.8 to 4.2 seconds, 0 to 60. It seems to run low 12s. Pretty much all day long. It's got launch control. I'm sure the conditions and the state of the tires and how many journalists have beat on the car, and it being rear wheel drive, especially, all are determining factors on the 0 to 60. But this is what I can tell you. I thought the car, I thought it was good. I thought it was comfortable. Going from SUVs into the Supra, like, you hit your head the first one or two times getting into it because you're like, hey, man, you're getting into a sports car here. You need to get down low. You need to swing the door open pretty wide and climb into it. I thought it was fine. It's a little snug. It looks a little small, but it's fine for me. Alistair Weaver from Edmonds that was here last week, he's, 6'5 or something, 6'4. He's a giant. He said he fits in the car. So I guess it's just a lot of putting the seat down and back as far as it goes. I guess a tall guy would fit. I don't know if Goldberg's going to fit. Maybe it's just shoulders are a little big for that car. I think he's going to feel a little claustrophobic being in it. But it seems to be okay. I had a couple little issues with the infotainment system, not in how it functioned, but how I viewed it. And it just felt like it wasn't getting bright enough, like when you're wearing sunglasses especially. And tell me if I'm wrong, but this is like an issue with BMWs, right? Some of their – if you're wearing polarized lenses, some of their things don't light up. You can't see with the polarized lenses. This had the touchscreen, which you can see, but it seemed kind of dark. And at night, it's better significantly. So I don't know. It's just one of these things where you're like, if you get the Supra or you get the Z4, I think you have to tint the windows to make it a little bit darker on the inside to see it. I futzed around with it a little bit to see if I can increase the brightness. I really couldn't find it in some of the display settings. Maybe I missed it. It's very possible. But I don't know. It's just one of those things and just sort of everyday driving. And I'm like, what? I can't see everything that's going on. So, it seems like a tint the window is the way to solve that problem. And it's going to look better with the tinted windows anyway. The handling is fantastic. The grip seems great. The steering feedback is good. The engine had a great power band. It always seemed to be finding these gears. The ZF transmission was solid. It's a great little sports car. And it sounds good. That's the other thing. It sounds good. I don't know how much of that they're piping in into the cabin through the sound system or something. But even when you do roll the windows down and in sport mode especially, the car did sound good. It has that weird like putter sound, you know, that when you know when it shifts does that, you know, kind of a turbo sound, but it's really coming out of the exhaust more, which was kind of interesting. I liked the car. I thought some people were complaining about visibility, but you kind of just rely on the mirrors, and it seemed fine. I didn't have any issues with that. Staggered wheels, I think, in tires. I think it's a 255 in the front, 275 in the back, and it scooted along good. As I got into it, each day I enjoyed the car more and more. And you know, again, I would have liked to have seen a different color. I posted some photos up on my social media. It's up on Facebook and Instagram. You can see the car that I drove. Now, this one was outfitted with a few options. It had the carbon fiber mirror covers and a few things like that. And I think the upgraded sound system. And it came in at $58,000. Now, at $58,000, what else out there would be a competitor? I know they were going after Porsche Cayman, and it's easy to say you're going after Porsche Cayman because it's the size and it's a two-door and it's a two-seater, and the Porsche Cayman's more expensive. So for Toyota and BMW to say, hey, we're going after Cayman, and we think we can get it, and we're going to do it for a little bit less money, that's a win. But you know, you tell me what else is out there that fits the bill. I don't think it's a good competitor to Corvette. Maybe C7 Corvette, but the new C8 Corvette, the Supra is $58,000. The new C8 Corvette is going to be $60,000. But that's a plain Jane, stripped down Corvette. I think if you optioned it out with similar things, the big stereo and the comfy seats and things like that, I think you're going to be closer to, you know, high 70s, low 80s on the Corvette. So that to me isn't really apples to apples. Maybe Mustang Bullitt, which is like 50, 52, something in that range. Mustang GT3 50 is probably in the $60,000 range. So it's very close to 58. If you could find one without any markups, I don't know if dealers are still getting them. They've been out for a while. You know, so it's kind of interesting. Do you want to spend $58,000 on a Toyota Supra? That's it's a good car. It's a lot of BMW. I guess it depends on why you're buying it. If you think you're buying it because you're seeing values of Toyota Supras go up, I don't know. Is it the best investment car? I couldn't tell you. I'm sure if you got one and you wrapped it in plastic and parked it in your garage, 15 years from now, you can take it to Bear Jackson and roll it out like anything with that low miles and get your money back. I don't know if you make money, but you're going to get your money back on it, potentially. But anyway, that being said, I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was fun to drive. I haven't driven the BMW Z4, so I don't know if there is any real difference between the two. I don't know if it makes sense to get the Z4 over the Supra. I can tell you, if you like attention, the Supra is the way to go. There's a lot of fans of the Supra that wanted to see something cool, and this car performs well. I don't know if it lives up to the Supra legacy, up to the brand name, but it was fun to drive. And then I switched it out for the most opposite thing you can possibly imagine. Just yesterday, as I'm recording this, yesterday I swapped it out for a Jeep Gladiator Rubicon. It's got the Fox shocks and all the good stuff on it, and just it's cool. I'm not a huge Jeep guy. I haven't driven really many Jeeps that I can remember, but you know, the Super, you're crawling into that thing, stepping down low, and then the Jeep, I'm literally climbing in it to get in it. The seats are very flat, and it's very utilitarian, and the dash is kind of flat, and the steering wheel is kind of flat, and there's some road noise, and you can hear it through the soft top, but it seems pretty cool for what it's supposed to be. Obviously, very different than a Supra. This one has the Fox shocks on it, and some of the off-road bits, which I'll dig into a little bit more. So I'll get into more of that later. I just started driving it, and it's going to be interesting. And then from there, we're going to swap it out for a Dodge Challenger Red Eye, which is interesting because of all the Dodge stuff that Goldberg does. I've driven his Red Eye a little bit, but haven't had a chance to really spend some time with the car. So we're going to be doing that as well. Anyway, so a few other things just in the news. But before we hit that, tell you about Geico. Let's talk about your home. Do you rent? Do you own your home? Do you rent your home? Well, either way, I'm sure it can be a lot of hard work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home and whatever, just in life. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. If you guys are wondering about... If you guys are wondering a little bit more about the Tesla Cybertruck, you may be getting an opportunity soon to dig into this little thing because the Cybertruck was spotted by someone who posted, an Instagram video, just somebody out on the freeway, saw a Cybertruck, and they saw Jay Leno driving it with Elon Musk riding shotgun, and this woman is hilarious.
Hey! Yep.
Yeah, she's shooting the video.
They got Jay Leno and Elon cruising down Crenshaw in this damn car. This is crazy. This shit look crazy as fuck. Look at this shit. Look how crazy this shit look. Sheesh.
Wait, there's a second one. Click over to the second one because the end is she's fantastic.
Look, y'all, we buy the little SpaceX car.
The little SpaceX car.
Little Elon Musk car.
That's what we're going to call it now. Little Elon Musk car.
That shit's tight.
It's so... we need to have her call in once a week. Give us little car reviews of stuff she sees on the 405 freeway. Anyway, they're driving it around. I guess they're maybe going to be filming some episodes of Jay Leno's Garage. Hopefully, I'd like to see it on Jay Leno's Garage. See what's going on. See, Jay is super nice. And if he's riding around with Elon Musk, it might be a little tough for Jay to say, you know, it's goofy looking or it's too big or whatever. He might just get in it and go, it's, you know, you did a great job. It's not for me. Who knows? Anyway, kind of interesting. And then the last bit that I wanted to put out there is I'm excited about the Ford Bronco and all these different variations. It's two doors or four door. It's a mini Bronco. It's a full-size Bronco. But the way I understand it, the Bronco is based somewhat on the Ford Ranger platform. And why this is interesting to me is I drove the Ranger. I like the Ranger. And although we don't have it in the U.S., there's a Ranger Raptor that's supposed to be pretty badass. We had a friend who drove one, I don't know, in Australia or something, and had an opportunity to drive one. It's like, this thing is awesome. It's a lot like a Raptor. The suspension is the same, just scaled down a little bit. And I'm thinking, if we don't get a Ranger Raptor, maybe we do get a badass off-road version of the Ford Bronco. Maybe we can get a Bronco with Ranger Raptor suspension and the Fox shocks and some of the tuning, or maybe it's a little bit of a flared fender thing and get a little bit of a wide body and stuff on it. That would be kind of cool to see. So we're starting to see spy photos, if you call them that, but they're testing the vehicles on the streets. They get wrapped up in all the camouflage, but you can tell that it's a Bronco. You can tell that it's wide wheels and all that stuff. So it'd be kind of interesting to see the different variations of the Bronco. We're getting much closer to it. So if you're excited about the Bronco, this could be kind of cool. And speaking of wide body, there is one thing that I saw on the Supra that I forgot to mention. Although it's a small car with a short wheelbase, the way I understand it, it is the widest sports car with that length wheelbase. So it is the shortest car. It's with the widest track, or however you want to say it. It's the widest short car you can get out there, and that helps to contribute to its handling ability. It's just an interesting stat that I came across. And I don't know how long that's going to last, but I thought that was kind of interesting. But anyway, that's kind of what's going on right now. I apologize that Bill had to jump off the phone. He had a very important meeting that he's very excited about, and maybe he'll come in with an announcement next week. But I think that's it. I think we're gonna wrap things up. Let's see. Are we forgetting anything? Anybody? Raise your hand. Are we forgetting anything? What do you got, Chris? Anything?
I might edit this out, but do we have something going on at the Peterson in March?
Yes, we do have something going on at the Peterson in March. I don't think tickets are available yet, but we're putting the final touches on it. Last year, we did a celebration of Adam Carolla Show, 10 years, and 10 years of CarCast. This year, it's going to be exclusively CarCast. CarCast Live, March 21st. At the Peterson Museum. Tickets will go on sale very soon, maybe even by time you're listening to this show. We'll find out. But there's going to be a huge car show. Bring out your cars. Show us your cars. We're going to be judging. Super judgy. Maybe we'll do what we did last year. It'll be my pick, Adam's pick, best of show, people's choice. We'll give out some trophies. We'll give out some awards. And then stick around for a screening, probably the Shelby Dock. We haven't completely decided. And although a lot of you guys have seen the Shelby Dock, it's cool to see it kind of live in an audience in that kind of environment. If you've been watching it on Netflix, this is a cool thing to do. You also get tickets to the Peterson Museum. If you've been there already, there's new exhibits going on all the time. If you haven't been there, this place is badass. They did like a $90 million or $100 million renovation. And then we'll do a live podcast as well. So the tickets can get you there pretty much all day. You can kind of come and go as you want, but write it down. Mark your calendars. Come to LA, March 21st, CarCast Live. I think it's going to be fun. It's the second time we're doing it. It's our second. We're going to make this an annual thing. And It's gonna be fun. Last year was a lot of fun. The one thing I really pushed on this year was I want more people to come out. Last year it needed to be somewhat exclusive. So this year it's far more affordable. Don't quote me on this, but I believe bringing a car is gonna be $30 to show a car. Maybe it's a little less, and there's a couple of variations on tickets, on screenings, and staying for the podcast and stuff that you can do. But if you're just going to show up as a spectator for the car show portion, it's basically going to be cheap, possibly zero, or maybe just like something nominal, $5 or $10 to keep the riffraff out. I don't know, we have an idea on that, and I think it's going to be good. Let's see if I can find it in front of me. Let's see if I dig through my notes. I would say, spectators free, car show, $20. Bring your car. And from there, the tickets go up a little bit. And we also will do a private garage tour of Adam's garage prior to the event. If you want that exclusive ticket, it's $250. This is why I'm going to let you in on a little inside track here. This is why I think it's special. It's very possible. Can't make a guarantee, but it's possible that the new building that we've been working on can be done, at least done enough that people that buy that ticket, that $250 garage tour ticket, might be the first people to go see the new garage with that we've been building out over, I don't know where it is, off the near Pasadena, somewhere in that area. So that could be kind of badass. Adam's been talking about building the mezzanine, this whole loft thing, and the permits and all this stuff. Yeah, it's going to be good.
So at least just save the date.
Save the date. March 21st, come to LA. I plan on being there all day. Or edit all of this out. But I don't think you're going to have to. All right, that's it. Let's wrap things up. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. And Goldberg, we'll catch up with you next week. And hopefully you got some news for us. And until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.